just changed my power level. How's my signal? I just changed the power level. It sounds like there's a band opening. So I'm trying to overcome that.
In the past, we've discovered that as you carefully aim the antenna a little bit more clockwise or counterclockwise, you get stronger. Right now, you are 90% audio, 10% noise. Just a little bit of hiss in the background, Paul. If you want to do an experiment by aiming the antenna a few degrees clockwise and telling me, even a few degrees counterclockwise and telling me, I'll tell you whether or not it gets stronger. Over to you.
Now let's just go back up to high power. How's this there?
Full quality. Are you afraid your transmitter might overheat at that power level of Paul?
Yeah, that's what happens once in a while. I leave it on 75 watts with this right now. And what happens is eventually you start to hear a beep and the words heat pop up. And that means that you're overheating. But I do have a backup fan, battery-powered fan that I put on it anyway. And that always keeps it cool enough. But if I forget that, then, you know, I don't want to overheat the finals. Let me drop it.
I'm going to give you a couple of words. Let me drop it. On the question that someone asked earlier, and that is, Voyager, is it getting close to Alpha Centauri? The one part that was a little bit mysterious on the 60 Minutes report is they led you to believe that Voyager 1 or 2, one or the other, is aiming toward Alpha Centauri, which they are not. They're not going in that direction at all. However, Roy put it very nicely when he said, Roy, that the Voyager is out there less than one... let me think now. Solar year? No, that's not the right way we call it. I'm trying to think of the way we... light year. Okay, there we go. One light year is 6 million miles. Voyager is out there less than one light day. That gives you a little bit of a hint as to the difference in range. There's another way of looking at the difference in range. Voyager is out there a little bit further than the diameter of our solar system, if you include Mercury, if you include Pluto. Another way of looking at the distance between the two closest stars that we know of, us and Earth, and Alpha Centauri. Let me drop something like 4.2, 4.3 light years away from us. Is that what's the typical spacing between stars? If we assume that that spacing is typical, and I think it is, the biggest thing in our solar system by a huge amount is the Sun. The Sun is a little bit shy of 1 million miles in diameter, a little bit less than 0.9 million miles in diameter. And when you compare that to 4.3 light years, the distance between those two stars, our Sun and Alpha Centauri, you might ask yourself, how many Sun diameters could I space between our Sun and Alpha Centauri? And you take the distance in miles and the diameter of the Sun in miles, and you divide the two, and the answer is 27 million. You could stack 27 million solar diameters between our Sun and Alpha Centauri. 27 million empty spaces, so to speak. That tells me a little, gives me a little bit more feeling for why when two galaxies collide, almost no stars hit each other. The spacing between them is huge. That's good when it comes to galaxies colliding. It's bad when it comes to us dreaming about ever taking a rocket ship and going to a star. Way out of the possibilities. Over to you, Paul, WS2N, K2IW.
That's a good comparison. I like that one. And then to give you an idea of the size of the Sun, because the million-mile diameter Sun doesn't register too much with some people, but if you take all the planets, Earth, the big planets, Saturn, Jupiter, add them all up, all the millions of pieces of it, the asteroid belt, Venus, all the planets, Neptune, combine all the stuff in our solar system. And if you take 1% of the Sun and then take 1/5 of that 1%, then maybe you're getting close to all the other stuff that's in the solar system. And now you take that. That gives you an idea of the size of the sun, and then I don't know how many million suns you said it takes to get to Alpha Centauri. But wow, that's a good reference point. I haven't heard that one yet, Dick. I like that one.
Yeah, the answer is 27 million. 27 million sun diameters will bridge the gap between our sun and Alpha Centauri. 27 million sun diameters. I expected it to be a few thousand, 27 million times more space than diameter of either of those stars. Wow. Over here, Roy. I made an poll. Get your eye to you.
Okay, terrific. Another test that was done, beginning of July, it must have been July, yeah, July 4th, India did an escape test on a someday will be a capsule spacecraft, a manned spacecraft. They worked on a manned space program. The country of India is run a test with a heat shield before they've launched it into space, and it's come back at roughly 25,000 miles an hour, and they checked out their heat shield I think it was 2012 or something when they tested it. Now they wanted to test a launch abort system, and they had this tractor system similar to what you would see on the Apollo missions. They have these solid booster rocket motors attached to the front of a manned spacecraft. It was attached to a fake booster on Earth, and they duplicated what would happen if there was, you know, some kind of an explosion on this fake booster. You know, in their real test, in the real world, it would have been a real booster. Would this launch abort system pull it away a couple of miles out to the Bay of Bengal? And that's what they did, and it worked. I saw the video for it. And it worked quite well. 27,000 pound spacecraft or something. They got off the ground in like a split second, and it went about a mile and a half out to sea. Parachutes opened up, and it came back down, and they had boats waiting for it to pick it up. So, different countries, the reason I bring that up, different countries, I mean, they have long-term plans, are working on manned space program. China, of course, has one. And India plans on doing the same. They have goals of eventually reaching the moon. My guess is first man launching, probably in the 2030s for India. They do have a long way to go, from what I've been reading. They have the launch capabilities. They have two rockets that they use quite a bit. They have the PSLV and the GSLV. GSLV is the geosynchronous launch vehicle that they use for their communication satellites. And then they have the PSLV, the polar satellite launch vehicle, which they use quite a bit for other purposes, polar launches, and also they'll launch to the moon with that one as well.
Paul, do you believe that both Japan and India intend to put some of their astronauts on the moon for some particular purpose, colonizing, gathering samples, just a study as an intermediate stepping stone? Do at least those two countries, are those the next two countries that are likely to put astronauts on the moon? Over to you, Paul, K2RIW.
No, not Japan. Japan will go with us. You know, they'll have there'll be a collaboration, I'm sure, when they decide to do it. My guess is that you'll see one of them on a space launch vehicle on a Orion spacecraft in the future. It's primarily China, of course, has strong goals of going there. In fact, they are developing a new launch vehicle, Long March 9, they have different numbers. They have the Long March version of their spacecraft, you know, the 2, the 3, 4. The biggest one right now is the 5. They have a 7, which is actually smaller than a 5. But the next biggest one that they're actually working on is the 9. And Long March 9 is as big and more powerful than what we had with the Saturn V rocket. So that will eventually be a moon rocket for China. India, well, right now, as far as I know, they're sticking with these two launch vehicles. But their goal is to eventually put somebody on the moon. They have a rover that's supposed to be going up shortly to land on the moon.
Okay, China intends to be on the moon. How soon? And did they say what purpose they're going to go there for? Is it a short-term stay of a few hours like our astronauts? Or is it to colonize? Or is it to gather samples? Or just to show the world that they can do it? What's China's motivation with reference to moon? Now, Paul, go ahead.
I'm sure they want to show that they, you know, they're a world power, and you know they can do what we've done. Don't forget, we're the only ones that have actually have done it. Russia was getting close, but officially hasn't done it. At least Russia has had some sample return missions come back, but no people yet. So they're all trying to catch up to us. Nobody does it like us, but we don't want to lose that. You know, that's why, you know, sometimes you hear people, they want to cut back on a space program. And I used to joke around years ago saying the last thing I needed was two Chinese taconauts. They don't call them astronauts, they're taconauts. But two astronauts walking around on the moon, recharging our batteries on a lunar rover, and then driving it around, you know, you wouldn't want to see that beam down to Earth. So we have to have, we always have to have a presence, not only in orbit on the International Space Station, but a permanent presence on the moon, and we would like to be first to Mars, of course. You know, could another country catch up and pass us? Of course, it's possible. Look how good Russia was doing in the beginning. Satellite, first man in space, first woman in space, and so on, first space station. So, back to you, Dick.
When Madeleine Young and Duke on Apollo 16 left the moon, and I'm trying to think of the year. Was that Apollo 15?
Madeleine and, let's see, that would be, let's see, 14 was Shepard. It was either 15 or 16. Let's see, Irwin and Duke. Irwin and Duke, I believe, was 15. So, probably 16.
Yeah, Madeleine Young and Duke, I'm pretty sure it's 16. I'm having trouble thinking of three guys on 15. When they left the moon, they unplugged the keys from the lunar rover car and they took the keys back home. So China's not going to drive that around. That's a bit of a joke. However, I am guessing the batteries on board were nickel-cadmium batteries. And when you talk about those ridiculously high temperatures and ridiculously low temperatures on the moon, after all these years, I think your chances of recharging those batteries is zero, Paul. So I wouldn't worry about somebody driving that car around. WS2N, K2RW.
Okay, very good. No, that's not going anywhere. But, which is the one that you listened to? Was that 16? That would have been Young, Duke, and Manley.
I listened to both 15 and 16, and I was tooling up to go to 17 when the company talked me out of it because it was taking up too much resources. So I had something like 3 hours worth of audio on 15 and something like 10 hours worth of audio on 16, astronaut audio when they were not connected to the networks. And Mattingly, Young, and Duke, 16. Why can't we think of 15? And I think the astronauts in 15, at least one of them is no longer with us. Over to you, Paul, K2RW.
Yeah, I know Irwin is gone, but I'm not sure about Warden. Warden was the... He didn't land. He stayed with the Apollo command module. But Scott was the other fellow, Dave. I'm sure he's still around. I mean, they were all leaving us, but I always wanted to, make, you know, next time we get back to the moon, at least have one of these guys around to comment when we finally do that. Okay, just going to go over the next important launches that we have going up. And there's one going up this week from Kazakhstan. Russia's launching Soyuz Progress mission, a cargo mission. And they've done this many, many times. This is like their 70th one. But this will be the first one. They've tried it two times in the past to orbit and dock with the space station in like 3.5 hours. So that's their goal. Three orbits, and they want to dock. They've tried it a couple of times, but unfortunately there was something. They aborted on the rocket, and they lost their 1 second window. Generally takes 2.5 days roughly to dock with the International Space Station. They get in line, they wait until the space station is pretty much in line with the launch complex, wherever it might be, if we're doing it or if Russia's doing it. And when it's pretty much in line, they'll launch, and they usually do get there in 32 hours or so. At the earliest. Now they have the capability of doing it in 6 hours, and on a four, I think it's roughly a four orbit launch. But they also have the capability of doing it faster and making it up in roughly 3.5 hours, and they haven't done that yet. But they're going to give it another try this time, and if it doesn't go off, then they're going to have to wait probably another week or two before they can launch. But we'll have to see. That'll be going off, I believe that's tomorrow. Today's the 8th, right? And tomorrow's the 9th. So, it's like 5 o'clock in the morning. No, wait. Eastern Standard Time would be 5 o'clock at night. 5, almost 6 o'clock at night. I'll have to see if they make that. This is WS2. And then July, you got Falcon 9. That's going to be launched from California. SpaceX is launching another group of Iridium satellites. They'll now have 65. They launch 10 at a time, so this will be, I guess, 56 to 65 new satellites for the Iridium constellation. And they'll be launching a new Block 5 Falcon 9 rocket. Block 5 is the latest and last iteration of the Falcon 9 rockets. That will be the one that will be actually taking that type of rocket, the Block 5. Falcon 9 will be the ones that will be launching people from this country within, hopefully within less than 6 months, going up to the International Space Station. That will be recovered by the ship. He's got a ship out in the Pacific Ocean called Just Read the Instructions. When I say he, I mean Elon Musk with SpaceX. And they plan on recovering Block 5 Falcon 9 rocket. Bringing it back, and with very little maintenance, because that's the good part about the Block 5 is you'll be able to launch this one over and over and over again. They pick around 10 different times in a row, and then refurbish a little bit, and then another 10 times, and so on and so forth, and maybe up to possibly 100 launches with one particular rocket. Compare that to the Block 4 version, where they would launch something up into space, catch the booster on a ship, or bring it back to land, Cape Canaveral, and then refit it and relaunch it again. They've done that many times. I think they're up to 14 or 15 times they've done that, and each time it's been successful. And they use the same rockets, the same vehicle. let me drop it. So hopefully they'll get that up and running, because they have a deal with NASA that as soon as they can launch a Block 5 rocket, or any amount of Block 5 rockets, up to 7 times for other uses, you know, cargo to the space station, launching geosynchronous satellites, in this case launching iridium satellites into roughly polar orbits. And, you do this 7 times with the Block 5 rocket, and it will be certified for human flight, and then NASA will accept it. And there's a lot of other ones, launches going further into the year, of course, but the other one we'll be paying attention to will be the Parker Solar Probe, and that will be going up in August 4th, and that's the one that's going to be going to the sun. And I remember Fred this earlier in the net talking about 38,000 mile per hour away from the Earth. Well, in roughly 7 years, it's going to take roughly that long for the Parker Solar Probe to get to the sun, which is going to be like 4 million miles away from the sun when it finally gets there. It will be traveling over 400,000, roughly 440,000 miles per hour in relationship to the sun. And then, because of the lightness of the spacecraft, they've just installed the heat shield to it. Because of all of that, and the speed from the rocket that they'll be launching on, it's only a little over a 1,000-pound rocket satellite going to the sun. It's being launched on a Delta IV Heavy, which are 3 Delta IV rockets. NASA's biggest rocket. You take 3 of them, put them together, and that's what it will be launching on from Cape Canaveral. And with that speed and with gravitational assist from the other planets, such as Venus, it will eventually get into solar orbit, traveling at this ridiculous speed of 440,000 miles an hour. The heat shield is installed. It's a carbon-carbon carbon-carbon, if you look in front of the space shuttle, that's what the front of the space shuttle is made up to resist the extreme heat of re-entry. Well, they take that same material and they make a heat shield out of it, and that's what's going to be protecting the Parker satellite as it gets near the sun. Okay, let the CW go by. Another interesting development in spaceflight is something by DARPA. DARPA is the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, DARPA. They have all these outrageous things that they come up with for developing new things, and they don't want to be left behind. In case the military ever needs to put up satellites real quick, years ago they decided we need to build a space plane. We need to be able to launch it from Earth and put, say, 3,000-pound satellites into orbit. And we need to bring this plane back, land on a runway, and be ready again to do it the next day if we have to. And the day after that, they need to have this capability of launching 10 satellites in 10 days, which means 10 launches. So they're in the process, well, Boeing is anyway, developing this new craft called the Phantom Express. Phantom Express is going to use liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen rocket. It's going to take the design of the RS-25 engine. The RS-25 engine is, you know, you look at the bottom of the space shuttle and there's three rockets that are attached to the space shuttle. I'm talking about the big boosters, the solid boosters on the port and starboard side. I'm talking about the space shuttle itself. Each one of those rockets develop, you know, like 400 to 500,000 pounds of thrust. I think it's 500,000 pounds of thrust. Well, DARPA is now paying Aerojet to rebuild the RS-25 to create the AR-22. You know, AR is for Aerojet Rocketdyne. That's the name of the company. 22. They're going to take one engine, put it in the back of what looks like a jet, is what it looks like, and they're going to put it in the back of this thing and put it on a launch pad, you know, vertical launch pad. You know, it's going to take off like a rocket. And it's going to go to orbit on the back of it, you know, sitting on the back of this space plane. Will be another booster type of thing. That would be the equivalent of the second stage booster. So it'll fly up to, the space plane itself won't go into orbit, but, it'll bring it up to as high as it could possibly go, and then release this second stage from the back of the space plane. And that will continue on and eventually put the satellite into orbit. The space plane itself will come down and eventually land back at the runway. And their goal is to have this capability 10 different days, 10 different launches. Let me drop. It's called the Phantom Express, by the way. That's the name that it's going on, the Phantom Express. So maybe someday soon they'll be able to get this thing off the ground. The length of this Phantom Express is going to be about 100 feet long and roughly 15 feet in diameter. It's going to have a pretty big wingspan, over 60 feet wingspan. Be able to have the capability of putting a 3,000-pound satellite into space, and maybe the first test might be coming up within a year or so. They plan on, you know, testing the aerodynamics of the Phantom Express, and we'll see how this project goes. Let me drop it.
I am PO-WA2CDL.
Hello, Andy. That's the news. WA2CDL, WS2MP.
Hi, am I interrupting something? Because I made a mistake earlier. I came in too soon.
No, we've just gone through all the latest launches and things that are going to be going on and all that. So, but we're waiting for you, for your question. Back to you, Andy. WA2CDL, WS2N.
All right, now I'll say hello to Dick and anybody else. I just turned the radio on, so I wasn't listening to what you were talking about, discussing, but I just want to confirm something. and then it's funny because I have a couple of questions because I forget. My memory is getting so bad. But the thing is, last week I was in a restaurant or a store. I forget where I was. But they had a TV playing in the background. I wasn't watching TV. I was shopping or eating or something, and I forget where. That's another forgetful thing. And I heard the news was on, and they said something about the space shuttle program is coming back. That they're going to start to launch the space shuttle again. And I said, oh. I thought that program ended, so I just wanted to know from you Is that true? Or maybe I was listening to something that was not right.
Well, I'm not sure what you heard, but they have up and coming flights out of the space shuttle. All four orbiters are retired. Sitting in a museum somewhere. So, in August, that would be the earliest, they plan on launching an unmanned spacecraft to the International Space Station that could be manned, but it's a test by SpaceX to bring an unmanned crew up to the space station, have it dock with it autonomously, with no help from the crew. You know how they usually reach out with a robot arm and grab it and birth it. It's going to dock automatically with nobody in it. Stay there for a couple of weeks, and then they're going to bring it back with parachutes. And then after that's certified, SpaceX has to go through a few more tests with other stuff. But maybe as early as January or February, or definitely by next spring, SpaceX will be able to launch a crew. They'll start with two up to the space station on their Dragon spacecraft, and with the same type of craft that just went up. And then once that gets certified, they'll be able to do this on a regular basis and bring up four people at a time. So maybe they were talking about that. And now Boeing, they have been under construction something called a Starliner, and that's being built. There's three of them being built in Florida right now. Let me drop it. And they're probably a month or so away, one way or the other, competing against SpaceX to see who's going to be able to do this first. But again, with their Starliner, they'll be able to eventually be bringing up four at a time to the International Space Station. So I'm guessing, I'm not sure, I didn't see the report, but maybe they mean that, what they're going to be able to do is shuttle people back and forth to the space station using, from our own soil, from Florida, which we haven't been able to do since 2011 with the Atlantis STS-135 mission, which was the final mission. Maybe they're talking about that. I would believe that, something along those lines. Maybe they meant that, Andy. WA2CDL, WS2S.
Okay, well, they certainly cleared up the question, because I have a feeling, again, I was not sitting in front of the TV to watch the thing. I just, the report to get the whole gist of what they were talking about. It was only in passing, so they are probably mentioning what you said, which makes sense. It's been since the ISS has been up there for all these years, and they have to replenish their supplies and change their personnel and so on. Incidentally, I saw, which, again, my memory is so bad, I forget. I saw a quick documentary on YouTube on one of the space shuttles that went up, and they actually showed the astronauts, entering the spacecraft and I guess what I remember seeing on this, they entered the space shuttle about 3 or 4 hours before it actually takes off. So it's a long wait, and it could be an uncomfortable wait because they're kind of strapped in and in a position where they can't move much. I guess that must be grueling on the body, just being in that position. But it was interesting because it showed the actual takeoff from inside, with the video camera of the shuttle, and then of course let me let it drop 1 sec before I time it out. I should be. Wait, am I listening to myself? Oh, now I am. Okay. I had this squelch up on my monitor. No wonder I couldn't hear myself. Now I do. So now I'll know if I'll time it. And then, of course, I asked myself the question because, you know, we've gotten so accustomed to seeing the space shuttle, you know, take off and land. I asked myself, how many space shuttle takeoffs? I know there were four space shuttles itself, but how many flights do they have total? I asked myself because I forgot the number, and I think it started, if I recall, in the mid-80s or so, maybe 84, 85. And then, of course, I asked myself another question, which is kind of interesting. The question I asked was, who was the first guy, the first person, male or female, that actually mentioned that they want to have a space shuttle, they want to do something with the space program and having a shuttle. Whose idea was this? Is my question. Where did this come from? which is an interesting question. But I did not look up. I did not do a YouTube search or a Google search to find the answer yet. Anyway, that's what I wanted to find out. You gave me the answer. Thanks, Paul, WA2CDL.
Yeah, 1981, April, was the first launch of Columbia. I remember listening to that on probably the 40th floor of a skyscraper that wasn't built, no walls, and had my transistor radio up there. I had to listen to that launch. And 135 launches, and two unsuccessful, one by Challenger, and one by Columbia. Challenger, of course, blew up 73 seconds after launch, and then we had Columbia in 2003, successfully went up, but came back and burnt up in the atmosphere over Texas. And that was due to the insulation that crashed through the carbon-carbon wing on the orbiter, and they didn't know that it was there. So, it evolved, you know. They always wanted to have some kind of cheap access to space, so they came up with, let's build a shuttle, but it turned out it really wasn't that cheap. You know, roughly $500 million per launch. Let me drop it.
Before you pick it up, I just wanted to ask you about that, because I remember, let me get the beeps, hold on. I remember back in the, when they started launching the shuttle, and you said 81, okay, so I was a little bit off, I said like 84, 85, and that's how long it's been. They were always concerned about the tiles, the heat shielding tiles, and they were always talking about that. They were inspecting the shuttle when it landed to see how many tiles, you know, fell off. I think that was a concern in the beginning, but then after a while, I think they solved that problem, and you didn't hear that too much. Because that was a big issue. I remember hearing about it all the time when they first started launching. Is that right? Am I correct?
Yes, that stayed a constant problem. You know, they were always re-gluing these things on, re-epoxying them, whatever they were doing to every orbiter. But, the first one lost quite a bit, and it was quite concerning. And they made a lot of different changes over the years, and they improved on them. But each one was, I think it was, 30, roughly, I don't know, it was either between 20 and 30,000 tiles, and each one was individual. Each one was shaped differently, so that became a problem. So each one had a number. Each one was about 2 1/4 inches thick. So the black ones on the bottom, they held up better, and then the lighter ones toward the side, and eventually they had these, like, heat blankets covering the port and starboard side, near where the windows were. You didn't get as much heat near the top, but the leading edge and on the bottom, and the nose, that got all the heat. So, very good, Andy. thanks for the question. Let's see, I got time for one more here. CRS 15 launched by SpaceX a couple of days ago, actually the end of June 29th, successfully launched from Cape Canaveral, and that was actually the last Block 4 version of the Shell 9 boosters to be used, and they sent that one up to the International Space Station with some 6,000 pounds worth of stuff.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Things like that, all kinds of hardware. And interesting thing that they brought up, you'll probably see it eventually on the news, is something called Simon, C-I-M-O-N. Instead of the name Simon, you know, spelled with an S, it's Simon, spelled with C-I-M-O-N. It stands for Crew Interactive Mobile Companion. Now, this was launched on SpaceX Dragon cargo vehicle. It's already docked with the Harmony node, Earth-facing side. So they open it up and they bring everything in. And one of the things that they're bringing in is this thing, like an oversized basketball. And it's got a television screen on it and all kinds of buttons. And, it has the ability to float through the International Space Station. And it's programmed really to listen to, his last name is Gerst, one of the astronauts is from Germany. And he worked with this thing before he launched. So, it's Crew Interactive Mobile Companion. It's like a robot. A robot that looks like a big ball. And he's going to be able to talk to it, and it's going to be able to give him information. It's going to be, when the shuttle is in certain locations, which is most of the times, it'll be linked with the cloud, and he's going to be able to speak to this thing and get information. It's going to be helping him out with science experiments, and it'll be floating around with him. And it's based on Watson. I don't know if you remember Watson, the computer that was built by IBM that Jeopardy used. Jeopardy used on this show, I think it was probably 2013 or so. They had a competition. They wanted to see, they took the best players in Jeopardy, and they teamed up against Watson, and sure enough, Watson, the computer, won. They played a regular game of Jeopardy. Watson couldn't hear the questions from Alex Trebek, but they would typing it in, and then the answers would go through. And sure enough, Watson, the computer, won. Well, based on that design, that computer is involved with this Simon, this Crew Interactive Mobile Companion that Gertz has got up there. Let me drop it. And, I would like to see how this thing eventually works out. They say it's got AI capability, so it's going to be able to learn as it's flying around inside the space station, and it will eventually be able to speak to the other astronauts as well. But it's, right now it's pretty much programmed for one guy's voice. So I had to bring that up before the end of the net. That's pretty much it. There's other little things here. We can let it go for now, and we'll carry it over to next week's net. Any other questions or comments? This is WS2N for the space portion of the TechNet.
With your permission, Paul, I'm going to go back to a previous subject. You were saying earlier that you believe Japan and the United States will be together on lunar-like missions, maybe with or without India. Is anybody even in the talking phase of sending American astronauts and or Japanese astronauts to the moon? If so, in their talking, how soon and for what purpose? The cost of going to the moon is a very large number. The risk is very large. The amount of time you can stay there is very small. So other than gathering samples, there's not a hell of a lot you can do. And we've already brought back hundreds of pounds of lunar soil. I don't think we need any more samples. So I'm having trouble believing. Each new administration says, we're going to use the moon as a stepping stone, and we're going to go to Mars. As you know, I don't believe either one. WS2N, K2RIW.
Well, yeah, I know. That's part of the problem. Each administration here is, 4 to 8 years long. Where in China, it's a lifetime. So they have long-term goals. And they can set their goals for, 10, 20 years down the road and not change them. And China has a goal of going to the moon. They want their big space station there, Tiangong 3, to be put up there within a year or so. Start building it, probably finish it 4 years down the road, maybe five. But the United States, we're a little bit different. George W. Bush, he wanted to go to the moon, but he created the Constellation program, And they were spent billions of dollars and stuff, and they had this whole system they were going to launch on Ares rockets, and they had all these cargo versions, and they even tested one. They launched one from Launch Complex 39B and tested. And as time went on, you had the Clinton administration. He pretty much didn't change much, but Obama got in there and, we're done with the moon. Let's cancel this whole Constellation program. Go to Mars. We're gung-ho. We're going to Mars. And it sounded good for a while. In fact, they're building spacecraft now. The Space Launch System has that capability to launch all the way to Mars, but with a crew. But they don't have all the details worked out on when they get there, how they're going to survive, and they need to do a lot more work. How they're going to make oxygen reliably, and how they're going to keep power going when you have a global storm on Mars, such as what you have now. You can't have solar panels. Panels are operating all the time. You're going to need nuclear power to keep people alive. They have a global storm right now that might last a month or two. That would kill everybody on the planet. So then you have now this new guy that gets into office, and what does he want to do? He pulls the plug on Mars. We're going back to the moon. But no, we're still going to use the Space Launch System because, the rocket's being built. So it's almost like these things are being built and then they start to get repurposed for different projects, depending on the administration that comes in. Long-term goal, though, for everybody. Let me drop it. Whether they do it or not, whether it's cost feasible or not, probably not, but is to eventually have a base on the moon, permanent base. In the beginning, it won't be like that. Who knows how many years it'll take to get that way. You're going to need nuclear power, so last through the lunar nights, which will last for 2 weeks. You're gonna have a problem doing all this. All the countries would like to do it: China, India, United States, and Russia. Russia has a big plan. They have financial problems too, but their goal is to eventually get to the moon. They have a new spacecraft they're presently building called the Federation, which will be able to launch seven people at one time. Federation is under development right now. So, there you go, Dick. Your guess is going to be as good as mine. Back to you.
Okay. That colony on the moon, you think it's going to take nuclear power? Because you don't have enough solar. You got a lot of solar energy on the moon. So if you've got a big enough set of solar cells and a set of batteries, you could store enough power for the lunar night. How in the world do you tolerate the temperature of the lunar day? At 150 degrees centigrade for essentially 14 solid days. There isn't enough air conditioning in the world. No matter what reflective surfaces you put on those abodes, they're going to get overheated and you're going to cook those astronauts. So, to put habitats and colony on the moon, the words roll off the tongue real easily. To really do it is nowhere near as easy as anyone realizes. It seems like the majority of the public doesn't realize this. Over to you, Paul.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot of steps. They want to put a space station up and operate things from a lunar space station. These things aren't built yet. They're in preliminary drawing. We'll see what happens. I don't know. Looking at the time, we're running out of time. And by the way, Roy, if you want to watch a show all about, you probably know it, Emergency Rooms, Code Black. It's on during the week. I think it's on 10 o'clock at night on Channel 2. I forgot the day. It might be a Wednesday. But it's an emergency room that's under siege all the time, 24 hours a day, every time you watch this show. It's incredible. In L.A., Code Black. I don't know if you... I'll turn it back to you, Dick, but that's really for Roy.
Okay, this was TechNet number 1706. That was Space Report number 306. That was Science Talk number 36. 73, you all. We'll be back. Roy's going to say some extra words if he wants to. AC2GS, K2RZ. Tie the ribbons on it, Roy.
Yes, thank you very much, Dick. Thank you very much, Paul. Once again, if anyone has any ideas or questions or answers or different types of approach to this, the email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. And in order to get links for all the news items that I mentioned, you just go to a web browser and type in roy.ac2gs.com. And as far as watching ERs on television, I don't think cops watch too many cop shows. If you've lived through some of this stuff, it's not really entertainment for us.
My guess is they get a lot of the facts wrong, too. Is that true, Roy?
Well, it depends. If they're dramas, yes, they always get them wrong. If they're real life, usually they get them right, I hope. I actually watched real type. But even House, which I enjoyed simply as a drama, kind of pulled things out of strange parts of their anatomy. It was very weird to watch, but if you kind of suspend disbelief, you can kind of go with it if the acting is great.
My guess is there were times when he was a little bit too smart, too little evidence, and he had an exact conclusion. He was a little bit too smart once in a while. Isn't that true on House?
Yes, unfortunately, it was very formulaic. So what he would do is pull a bizarre diagnosis out of a hat at the beginning. It would be wrong. Then he'd pull an equally absurd diagnosis in the middle, and he'd be wrong. And then he finally would have an aha, eureka moment and guess the right one at the end. And it just lined up very nicely with the commercials.
Okay. Bye-bye, you all. K2RIW clear.
Yeah, anything that has to do with your occupation, any occupation. When I see all these sprinkler heads going off and
Roy, WA2CDL, could you go to your repeater? The Kings County, I'll meet you there.
8:30. Welcome to the WQEL repeater.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England Reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England Reflector.
Link active.
Repeater system.